Let me tell you a story. We are in the bustle and the heat of Jerusalem, the most distant and forgotten corner of the Roman Empire. Inside the headquarters of the occupying forces, Pontius Pilate is at his desk. Pilate is 33 years old. He's a mid-level government bureaucrat, and he's here in the Middle East on a resume-building exercise. Pilate is a busy man, and when he gets to be older, he hopes to be an important one. When he returns to Rome, he hopes to be somebody important. In the meantime, he wants things and people to proceed in a way that requires as little paperwork as possible. He wants them to fit into the categories, to behave in much the same way that they always have. He doesn't want to have to work overtime, and he wants the headache that has been building all day to go away. He just wants things to be sensible. This has been a full day for Pilate of administration, of interviewing prisoners, of determining who will be flogged, who will be released, who will be crucified. But he's been struggling to concentrate on his work. It's not just the headache. He has those all the time. There's something else, something nagging at him, a memory. His mind is pulled back, skipping like a stone across the waters of his recollection to his childhood, to a time when he lived in a world of wonder and of imagination. Pilate pushes the memory down, tries to bury it under the dust that coats everything. He almost succeeds. He's ready to go home, he's ready to have a drink, but there is one more interview. The paper on his desk says a carpenter and a disturber of the peace, the king of the Jews. And so Pilate gets up and starts walking towards the interview that will haunt him for the rest of his life. The interview in which his imagination will fail him. And then he's in the cell, face to face with the prisoner. The prisoner is in shackles, and they are utterly alone. Pilate senses that there is something remarkable about this man. He has a sense just moving in the corner of his eye, an idea that there is a gravity that pulls him towards this man, that somehow in this interview, even though he holds all the power, including the power to pronounce death, that this man has all the authority. Pilate asks his first question. So, you're a king. Now, this is the part in the interview where the prisoners normally start to weep or to rage or to beg for their lives. But not this man. The serenity in this man's eyes is terrifying. This prisoner does something that no prisoner ever does. He looks right at Pilate and he asks him a question. Do you ask this on your own, or did others tell you about me? Is that how it was? It's hard not to speculate about this scene, about what might be the most iconic exchange in the Gospels. Jesus and Pilate. Pilate may well be the only person who gets to have a private interview with Jesus. The only person who gets to talk all by himself with God. In virtually every other conversation with Jesus that the Gospels record, with the possible exception of the woman at the well in the fourth chapter of John, there's always somebody else hanging around. The crowd, the disciples, the tax collectors, the centurions, the Pharisees. But not here. Pilate is alone with Jesus. He can say or ask whatever he likes. For the Christian, this opportunity is tantalizing. Consider what it would be to be all alone with Jesus, to be able to ask or to say whatever you wanted. You would be limited only by your imagination. What would you say? Now hold all those possibilities in your mind, all the things you might say or ask Jesus, and then think about what Pilate asks. He asks about personal power. So you're a king. You have money, you have property, you can determine who will serve and who will eat. I think this is one of the reasons that Pilate tantalizes us. He touches a fear that we will meet Jesus and that we won't clue in to who we're talking to. That we will ask entirely the wrong question. That we'll be so busy asking who the king is that we'll forget to ask about the kingdom. Jesus responds to Pilate's question the way he often responds to questions. He asks a question of his own. Do you ask this on your own, or did others tell you about me? The folks who translated the New International Version of the Bible give us the lively alternative, is that your own idea? Think about this question, about what it means to Pilate, about what it means to us listening to this story almost 2,000 years after Easter. This is the question on which the entire interview hinges. And now think about what it means that Pilate refuses to answer it, that he's irritated. There are no accidents in the Gospels or in the creeds, for that matter. There's a reason that this reading is structured in the way that it is. There's a reason that we mention Pilate's name every Sunday. A reason that in a few moments, when Mary leads us in the Nicene Creed, we will speak Pilate's name. For that Pilate is an icon for an error that is as old as humanity. He is a man who has been taught to suppress his imagination, who has been taught to retreat instead into a sad world of permanence. A world in which the Roman Empire is going to last forever, a world predicated on power, a world in which it is impossible to imagine anyone motivated by anything other than selfishness and fear. Friends, this is a picture of a world in which there can be no faith. For faith is built upon the imagination. Faith is built on that ability to say, I believe in something that will never be proven, that I see the wonder in change, that I believe that God's kingdom is not something that happens after we die, but something that we can build right now. Jesus understood the central role of imagination in faith. Think about how he taught, about how he proclaimed the kingdom of God, about how he invited people to consider a different set of rules for life. He told stories, the gateway to the imagination. And the imagination is what Jesus is trying to get Pilate to unlock with this question. Did you think of this on your own, or did somebody else tell you? Is that your own idea? Or is that a lie you've been told about how the world has to work? It's fitting that Christ the King this year comes 20 years after the Berlin Wall fell. The falling of that wall, like the falling of every oppressive structure, was built first on an act of faith, on an act of imagination, of somebody saying, you know what? This is possible. I remember coming home and watching the images of the wall coming down and saying, that's impossible. Other things have been impossible in the past. There was a time when the end of apartheid was impossible, a time when women getting the vote was impossible, when contraception was impossible, when we always knew that this country would never have an African-American president. Each piece of imagination falls like a snowflake on the roof of a prison. By itself, it is nothing, but as it is joined by another piece of imagination, and then by another, the weight of possibility builds up, and then in an instant, the weight is too much, the roof is down, and the prisoners are free. So what's impossible today? What have you been told is never going to change? Do you think this on your own, or did someone else tell you? Is it impossible that poverty will end? Impossible that gays and lesbians will ever find a real place of dignity in the church? Impossible that healthcare could become a human right? Is it impossible that our society could hold something as a central value other than profit and self-interest? I'm glad that folks go to football games and hold up those signs that say John 3:16. It's a beautiful passage. But the sign that I want to hold up at the next Raiders game is this one, John 18:34. Is that your own idea? Did you think of this yourself, or did someone tell you? Is the kingdom really that distant? Is God really that small? Is this what you thought the world was going to be like when you were a child? Let's do something that Pilate cannot. Let's engage in an act of imagination, in an act of faith. Let's imagine that the impossible has happened, and that that man who stood before him in that prison was God. That God lived with us. And let's imagine something even more impossible. That after Pilate did the sensible thing, after he washed his hands, after he sent that man to be legally executed by a perverse justice system, that 3 days later that man was resurrected. What if that were true? What else would be possible? And now let's do something that Jesus did a lot of. Let's tell a story about reversal, in which that man, that calloused and dirty peasant carpenter, that man who spent his life eating with and healing and telling stories to the most unpleasant kind of people, is the king. Not the kind of king that Pilate can imagine, mind you, but the kind of king who knows that in the greatest of kingdoms, the role of the king is to serve. And now imagine that that king stands in front of you, close enough to reach out and touch. You are all alone, and he looks you in the eye. Just imagine.